Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel, and proud member of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. My name is Arimithius, and this week we reach the halfway point of our look through the Truth in Sequence. We are at volume 6 of 12, folks. And this one turns a little bit towards the Clockwork City itself and has some frankly fantastic descriptions, which I'm not sure I can add a huge amount to, but I think are good to share anyway. The Truth in Sequence, Volume 6, taken from the Sermons of Deldries Morvain, 4th Torbillion to the Mainspring Everwound. By the word, I wind the gears. Behold the Clockwork City, the throne aligned, the omni-axle, the brass-throat herald of joyful destruction, the oil-slick tower of seamless assembly. Rejoice! Rejoice! There's a fair bit to unpack in that statement. It's got a good few statements of intent about what Deldries thinks the Clockwork City is and possibly what Sothisil thinks the Clockwork City is. It's worth remembering that these are not the words of Sothisil. I recently saw an absolutely fantastic comment from Mojo on these, and he basically says these are possibly some of the best pieces of Sothisil fan fiction that have ever been written. And that's, I think, exactly what's going on here. This is Deldries squeeing about Sothisil and the Clockwork City, and this volume is the apex of that, in my opinion, because it goes into so much detail about what the Clockwork City is and how wonderful it is. But there's a few words to unpack here as well. The omni-axle is one thing. Axles are a thing which turns other things. You look at axles on a car, and axles turn wheels. An omni-axle is then an axle which is designed to turn all things. And that goes back to the purpose of the Clockwork City, possibly, that we've talked about previously, that at least in 2920, if you look at that, then the Clockwork City is both reacting to and having an impact on events on Mundus. So if something particular happens on the Clockwork City, then it'll influence things happening on Mundus. And the Omni-Axle is a brilliant statement of that. The Brass Throat Herald of Joyful Destruction, going again with some bits from Mojo here, this is possibly a contrast from the Numidium, which is potentially a herald of something and made of brass, but it's also not about joyful destruction. It's about destroying everything, rendering everything thoroughly erased, and it's not purposive destruction, so to speak. It's not destruction which will lead to something else. And we've already had Curiosity referred to as the Joyful Destroyer in previous volumes here. That joyful destruction is a thing that will lead to the creation of better things afterwards. The oil slick tower of seamless assembly. I don't honestly know whether this is the case, but if they're stating an omni-axle as a thing upon which everything turns, and talking about a tower, then I think it's possibly worth restating the model of the cosmos that Vivek seems to think is the way things work, the idea of the Arabis as a wheel, with the Aedra as the spokes, and Mundus as the hub of the wheel, and the axle in itself goes through the hub. And you've also got the idea that the wheel, if you look at it sideways, is a tower. So in expressing a tower, you are expressing the wheel, in which is expressing the universe. And within that whole symbology, you've got quite a bit of power. And so also, if the Clockwork City is an axle, it's also potentially a tower. So that might also be something that Sothisil is trying to do with the Clockwork City, that you've got his dialogue stating that he only sees unsteady walls and he's trying to secure it up for those living on Mundus that aren't moving beyond. And you've also got it that from the Numianti intercept that the towers are, quote, spikes of unassailable reality. They are reiterations of the reality that is the tower, which is the wheel. So I don't know whether Sothsil's intent here is to create another tower using the Clockwork City or creating the Clockwork City as a tower. That's typically been something that we've seen the Aeliads do. They tried to corrupt Phalaneste into being something else, and Greensap, the Green Tower, into being something else. And you've also got the Doomcrag in High Rock that was potentially also trying to be a tower. So the Aeliads are definitely associated with towers, but we've had no indication that the Dunmer have even tried to make anything else apart from Red Tower, which they've had not through their own doing, but ever since they moved to Morrowind, which is the Red Mountain. Although, just to pick on another thread and just keep on going down this rabbit hole, Sothsil did try to make a clock. Well, he didn't try to make a clockwork heart. He actually made a clockwork replica of the Heart of Lorcan. So if he was making a replica of the Stone of Red Mountain, it might be possible that he's trying to make the Clockwork City a replica of Red Mountain and a tower in itself. So I don't know. I should disclaim that by saying that's entirely my speculation based on this passage and some of the things that Sothsil has said, but I think it makes sense, at least to me. If you have other opinions or want to disagree with me, feel free. Drop me an email at writtenuncertaintypodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment wherever you're listening, or join the Written in Uncertainty Discord, which has links in the description along with everything else, the Robots Radio Discord and my Patreon and everything else. Listen, child of the Tribunal. Do you not hear the whir of the gears, the hiss of the pistons? It is the voice of Sothsil calling you to the Nirn ensuing, to the Tamriel final, Anuvanasi. Cast down your worldly maths. Loosen the chains of your selfish pursuits. Shall I describe it to you? Shall I guide your eyes to the future of Nirn? Hear the words in sequence, dark child. Close your eyes and awaken. Gaze up to behold a crystal sky, girded and bound by Set's bright bands. Look down to behold the black stone of his will and his imagination made clay. Drink his truth, thick as blood, from the broad black rivers. Feel his breath on your skin. Let its dreamy redolence fill your nostrils and sting your eyes. You stand at the centre of the wheel, the home of the mainspring Everwound. And that last line, I think, is confirming what I've said earlier. If they're intending to be at the centre of the wheel, which is the Arrabis, then Sothsil is trying to build a second tower or a second thing to undergird the structure of the wheel. There's also a lot of imagery in here that reminds me an incredible amount of Yawgmoth from the Magic the Gathering mythos, because he takes over the plane of Phyrexia and essentially starts remolding a whole bunch of people he steals from other planes, making them into half mechanoid, half living things, and transforming the plane of Phyrexia into one giant factory to pump out his vision of perfection and a new and perfect world that is the synthesis of matter and machine that never rots, that doesn't break down and is essentially immune to corruption because it's being fortified by the power of the machine and something to do with the plane itself, I think. It's been a while since I've looked at that, but I'm not sure that there is a real connection between Phyrexia and the process of Phyresis, but this whole passage of kind of looking out and seeing this huge mechanistic industrial, it kind of sounds like a hellscape almost, but it's talked about as something that is bright and something that's aspirational here, you can't help but feel the awe that Deldries is trying to impart, even if it doesn't really fit with what you think is ideal. The idea of broad black rivers and breathing in various things from the Clockwork City, breathing in all the effluence, all the fumes, and all the crap that stings your eyes, that's something that is to be celebrated here, which is something I would fully expect from Yawgmoth and his devotees. And we now have some more description, which sounds very, very like Phyrexia even further. Just, if you want to look into that, look at the artifact cycle of novels for the Magic the Gathering universe and look into that. It's not the best writing in the world, but it does have some fantastic ideas in the plot. Obsidian towers stretch ever skyward, festooned with polished brass and godly filigrees. Great turbines drive memory through a thousand pipes that stretch out like tangled veins, or the golden roots of an ageless tree. And I just want to pause there and point out one thing that's very, very weird that you can skip past, but makes perfect sense when you know what it means. Great turbines drive memory through a thousand pipes. How do you drive memory through pipes? This only makes sense if you speak to a particular Daedra cultist in ESO who points out that memory is water, that the memories of the dead become water. So pumping memory is pumping water. And producing steam, I don't know what that would mean, because there's an awful lot of steam metaphors with Sothisil and so on, but if you are making mortar into steam, are you making memory into something productive, using memories to drive you somehow? Which is pretty similar to how quite a few people operate, and people operate in general. You can't really operate in a world when you don't have experience of how it works, so you remember that the fire burned you last time, so you don't go near it again, and so that memory is driving you on and influencing your behaviour. And on a more political level, maybe, some nationalist movements, and most nationalist movements, will generally appeal back to a golden time before, a bright age, and the memory of past glories as something to drive you into action in the present. So, memory driving you on is quite literal here. Memory being pumped round to power everything has a hell of a lot of symbolic meaning here. And wandering amidst the humming and hissing paradise are his second children, the Fabri Sirenusim, the merged ones, birthed of the unsequence and bound to the Nern ensuing. Now, I probably absolutely mangled that. It's Fabri Sirenusim. I'm going to go with that and leave it at that. It sounds vaguely angelic to me, the way it ends in im, at least, because you have the seraphim and the cherubim and so on. I think that's kind of what the word is trying to evoke here, that these are the supernatural, the godly guardians of the Clockwork City. And I also think they are the fabricants. That's certainly the opinion I've seen in other places, most particularly the USP. They equate that word with fabricants quite explicitly, but it's never pointed out here as to exactly what that is and what the Fabri Sirenusim are. But there's some clarification going on here that sounds like it's, again, it will reinforce the angelic narrative, but we'll get into precisely how and why as we go through. The merged ones, birthed of the unsequence and bound to the Nern ensuing. Now, that birthed of the unsequence, being birthed in the between place, unsequence is used as an idealized state in previous volumes of The Truth in Sequence. So they were born perfectly, born in the ordered unsequence, which was talked about earlier. And in some ways, that makes their birth, their creation, whatever it is, some form of immaculate conception, which again links back to the angel metaphors. They had a perfect beginning, and so they are bound to the perfection of the Nirn ensuing as that comes about, and Tamriel final, and so on and so forth. It also feels like, because they will have been made in the Clockwork City, that the Clockwork City's separation from Mundus and being held distinct from Mundus is part of its design as well, that it's being pulled outside of the imperfection to make sure that Nirn doesn't contaminate it. If you speak to several of the residents of the Clockwork City in ESO, they show very similar attitudes, that there is no way in or out of this place for them, that they don't know how Nirn functions at all. And so it's intended to be something that's entirely separate in order to bring about a change for the whole cosmos that it's isolated from and therefore is not influenced by. They cry out in one voice, "Death to multitudes, woe and terror. Let the fragments melt in the boiler of unknown angles. Let the falsehoods burn in the furnace of forgotten numbers. Disassemble and cleanse, dismantle and make whole." They are the guardians, the ever-wound keylords. Only the nameless heart avoids their wrath. Their hatred of discord knows no limits. And here we have an expression of their role as the enforcers, or the ordinators, if you want to draw parallels with the rest of the tribunal, of the Clockwork City. They are there to drive forward the agenda which we've been hearing about so far, this one of unity and perfection and a perfectly working machine. They are there to eradicate everything else that doesn't fit that pattern, hence the disassemble and cleanse, dismantle and make whole. They're there to render down everything that is something that will go against the purpose of the Clockwork City. For the road to Tamriel final is not a bloodless one, child of the tribunal, Anuvanasi. Contemplate this with a pious heart. Seek a clean and well-oiled soul. It shall serve you well in his truth to come. So you see, the Clockwork City is like Sothisil himself, rich in beauty for the faithful, and alight with sublime terror for the servants of chaos. In which Clockwork City would you reside? Commit your small blasphemies and think on this. By the word, I wind the gears. And now remember that small blasphemies are those doubts and questions to try and work it out, to try and arrive at the proper answers and produce questions that will drive you forward as an individual. So this is a question that you're supposed to ask yourself. Which world are you supporting? Are you supporting the one that's full of beauty and perfection and unity and all this lovely stuff? Or are you trying to support discord and multitudes and everything being separate and alone and dark and horrible? But I'm also reminded of this as I read through of some of the work of St. Augustine, most particularly the City of God Against the Pagans. In that work, St. Augustine talks about two cities. He talks about the Civitas Terrene and the Civitas Dei, which are the earthly city and the City of God, respectively. It's the idea that people, if they are faithful or not, will dwell in one or other of these cities, and they are in constant conflict, that it's an expression of a spiritual reality in terms of a city and conflict and politics, which is something that this is riffing off, I think, that the Clockwork City can be two things in the same way that the world can be two things to Augustine. That you've got the perfect and orderly and wonderful Clockwork City, which is also full of terror for everyone who doesn't follow along, whereas you've got the City of God, which will support and ultimately be triumphant for the faithful and the earthly city, which is full of corruption and failure and sin for everyone else. And that's the question that Deldries is trying to force here. It's making that choice between not so much where would you reside literally, it's what would you believe, what will you act in accordance with, and what will drive you. Going back to that memory thing, it's the idea of not just the water of memory driving you, but the right oil, the right intent to drive you forward, which we talked about in the previous sermon to this. And once you have something that's clean and well-oiled and has been properly prepared for Tamriel Final, you will be in a position to help drive that forward. And that's it for this week. Thank you ever so much for joining me through this exploration of the Truth and Sequence. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we are now halfway through. Next week, we start talking about motion and lines, and probably some bits of causality as well. Join me then as we go into Volume 7. But until then, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and presented by Arimithius. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glimbotsky and Jeremy Sewell. Check out Jan's work on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northerner Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Brad. We're lifelong friends.
And the hosts of the Film and Whiskey Podcast. This is the show where each week we review a classic movie and a glass of whiskey.
That's right. Every week we go in-depth on a well-known movie while sampling the best from the world of scotch, bourbon, and more.
Because nothing goes better with strong opinion than equally strong liquor.
Bob's a movie nerd.
Brad's an average Joe.
But together, we give fresh insights and hot takes on the world of movies and spirits.
So check out the Film and Whiskey Podcast,
part of the Robots Radio Network.
Should introduce myself. I'm Corin Black, a humble half-demon, and folks around Baltimore call me the Devil's Runt. Here we go, finally moving again.
How do you feel about methamphetamines?
You know, devil's blood don't make you a devil.
Under the Shroud, fantasy, noir, and horror from Baltimore's sin-soaked streets. Find creator Ian Humphrey on Twitter @FictionalIan.